And all the people said, amen, beautiful singing. So for those of you maybe just coming here for the first time, we're doing a sermon series about stories in the Bible, and we're looking at the story of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz today. We've been looking at this passage for a while here in this book, but we're going to look at the third chapter today, some of it. Cindy, we're going to cut it a little short, so I'll tell you where, but all right, so here it is. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, to Ruth, "My daughter, I need to seek some security for you so that it may be well with you. Now here is our kinsman Boaz, with whose young women you have been working. See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now, wash and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." Evidently, they wanted him a little intoxicated. "When he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." She said to her, "All that you tell me, I will do." This is Ruth talking. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had instructed her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, and he was in a contented mood, he went to lie down in the end of the heap of grain. Then she came stealthily and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and there, lying at his feet, was a woman. And he said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your cloak over your servant, for you are next of kin." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. This last instant of your loyalty is better than the first. You have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now my..." Do we have it? There you go. "My daughter, do not be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. For all the assembly of my people know that you are a worthy woman." I'm going to stop just there. Now, if you really listen to that story, Ruth did not do exactly as Naomi said. So keep that in mind as I talk here, because she does something a little different. Now, I have to admit to you today that I almost changed the scripture for this morning's worship service. I mean, we've been through a heck of a week, right? Starting maybe with Tuesday, it's placed our country and our world in a place our bishop, Cedric Bridgeforth, says, unlike any other that we've ever been in before. This is uncharted territory for us. And when uncharted territory comes our way, it brings out one thing, I think, more than anything, anxiety and fear. And those anxieties and fears are real. They're legitimate for our people, for our world. I've had call after call on my phone of people just full of anxiety and fear. So with good reason, I could have switched scriptures. But as I was praying about our church and considering where many of us are in our lives, I kind of decided that Ruth is a pretty good story for us. It's a good book for us to be in right now. After all, almost all, I might add, believe that Ruth was written by a woman. Now, there aren't too many books in the Old Testament, or even the New Testament, that are written by women. This might be the only one. And we need to listen to women today, don't we? I mean, this is important for us. Just like Ruth listened to Naomi in her grief, we especially need to listen and hold the grief of so many women today who again and again and again seem to feel the agony of defeat in this country. But there are other reasons for this passage. Another reason I think Ruth is so appropriate for us today is that the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, were redacted in the middle of their history. They were put back together, all these books of the Bible were kind of put back together. And one of the places it happens is when the people of Israel were in exile. They thought they were going to be a great country. They thought they were going to lead the world. They thought everybody was going to come to them, right, and come and find comfort and hope and peace and be included in their country. And then they were wiped out. Their capital city, Jerusalem, was taken. The temple where all of God's holiness was, according to their faith, the temple was the place where God resided. The Ark of the Covenant, where the scrolls were for the Ten Commandments, where the scrolls were for all of their books, that was taken away, stolen, and taken to another country. Their major leaders, stolen, taken to another country. And I think in some ways, many of us feel a little like that, not totally, but especially about our books of democracy. Are we going to be able to hold on to our democracy? It's something. So, and I think this book speaks to that. And I also want to say that Ruth and Naomi were in a situation much like that, right? When they lost their husbands and they had to move back, when Naomi decided to move back, there was no hope for them in that society. All the power was in the men's hands. And so Ruth's story, I think, makes sense for us today. But let me add a couple more insights, because I'm into these insights right now, about the book of Ruth that are interesting to me. I'm skipping around here. Ruth is different than any other book in the Old Testament in a couple of ways. First of all, in so many of the stories that include women in the Old Testament, particularly in the Hebrew Scriptures, which most of them were written by who? Men. Women are always at odds with each other, almost always. Here's what Allison Ann Tilborg writes in a book, Why the Book of Ruth is Radical. Historically, she writes, the relationships between females in the Bible are anything but harmonious, as evidenced by the relationship between Sarah and Hagar. They didn't get along. Leah and Rachel. They didn't get along. Hannah and Peninnah. Biblical feminine relationships are repeatedly riddled with jealousy and hatred. But in the narrative of Ruth, the reader is introduced to a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law who bond, who come together over a similar sense of loss. In a society where a woman is defined almost entirely by marital status and the capacity of her womb, Naomi expresses hopelessness when she loses both her husband and her only children. Ruth experiences somewhat comparable despair. She's a young, recent widow without any children or family since she has moved to a foreign land with a frankly powerless mother-in-law. Both of these women have hit rock bottom. However, both of these women identify the importance of female bonding in terrible times such as this. It's the bond between those two that drives this story. Ruth and Naomi come together in despair. They don't fight in despair. They come together. Ruth and Naomi are calling us to come together in our despair, to listen in grief and pain, but also to start scheming. Because that's what they start doing in chapter 3. They start scheming on how they can get through this thing. Start scheming about new ways we can go forward. We come together and realize our sense of community, and it's that community, it's this place here, folks, that moves us out into the world to take risks again. And this story, Ruth, is anything but complacent. She is not a law-abiding keeper of the rules. If I can say this, close your ears if you don't want to hear it. She's one badass woman. I mean, she really is. She is. She is breaking the rules all the time in order to bring hope and home to her loved ones. Ruth is our first feminist, if I might say. Now, here's what my preaching professor, John Holbert, says. The most explicit expression of what Avery would consider feminist is in the third chapter, we just read it, where Ruth approaches Boaz at the threshing floor. And I want you to hear this here. Naomi hopes to marry Ruth to Boaz to retain both land ownership and then hopefully continue the family line. She gives Ruth unambiguous instructions. Beautify yourself, go to the threshing floor, surrender yourself at Boaz's feet, and let Boaz do what he pleases. Those are Naomi's words. But Ruth does something a little different, if you kind of watch. She finally cleans herself up. She goes to the threshing floor, but she doesn't wait for Boaz. She does not wait. Instead of surrendering to the will of Boaz's desires, she is the one who takes her action here. She says to Boaz, spread your robe over your handmaid. Do you hear that? Ruth boldly asks Boaz the question. She doesn't wait around for Boaz to act. She acts first. She's not going to play a victim here. She's not going to just surrender. No, she is acting here. Now, this scene has some sexual overtones, and you can read about those if you want to go online. But this line, really, what Ruth is doing here is she is asking Boaz, do you want to marry me? That's what she's doing. The woman is asking the man, do you want to get married? The exact opposite of what that society would have been doing. Man, let me tell you, that takes some guts, right? I mean, that's badass in my book. And now let me center a little on Boaz, because he's important here. He is the landowner, right? He's the one with the power. He's the patriarch. He's the one many of us with privilege, right? And what does he do? It's such a beautiful example for us today. Look what he does. Does he lord it over Ruth in this situation? Does he expose her in her most vulnerable place on the threshing floor? Does he let his hired hand have their ways with her? Does he make her grovel in the dirt for the last scraps? Does he send her back home to her country? No, he does not. Instead of accepting Ruth right then and there, he consults about options that may benefit her more. I mean, he's looking into a better way for her. He offers a way to leave the threshing floor without being noticed, and even sends her off with a bunch of money, barley in this case. Ruth's upfrontness rewards her, not punishes her. Boaz uses his position of power to protect, to empower, and to include the powerless. He listens to Ruth's powerful voice. Now, another thing I want to just talk about here is a word that's used a lot in Ruth, and it's used in the Old Testament quite a bit. It's a Hebrew word called hesed. A beautiful word. Ruth is, I just want to say, it means mercy, loving kindness. I'll go into that a little bit later. But if you really want to look at the book of Ruth, I think Ruth, as a person, is the image of Christ in this story. She is mercy. In fact, one of the Hebrew words that is introduced in this story is hesed. It's in the 8th and 9th verse of the first chapter. And it's really interesting to me, because if you're a Bear Creek fan, you should know this word. Because we have one author, I think, in our midst. And his name is David Orndorff. He was the pastor here for 10 years. And he just wrote a book. What is it called, Dave? The Way of Loving Kindness. The Way of Loving Kindness. Yes. I'm supposed to say that. Loving kindness is hesed, right? I mean, hesed is a term God uses for his covenant people, and they're called to meld together justice, love and mercy, grace and goodness, loyalty and devotion. I think you would have used hesed if everybody knew that word, right? I just think that's wonderful, right? It's such an amazing story that we have here. Now, Ruth, according to numerous scholars, is not just a story, but it's really a theological breakthrough in the Old Testament, a prophetic voice for us. In this story, God is calling God's covenant people, the church, to meld together justice, love, mercy, grace and goodness, loyalty and devotion. We're called to live hesed out into the world, loving kindness. And it doesn't matter who's in power. We're called to live hesed, loving kindness. It doesn't matter who's the president on January 6th. We're called to meld love, justice and mercy, grace and goodness, loyalty and devotion, and weave them into the world. Now, just one more allusion here. I'm into them here. The story's got so many cool things. I don't know if you caught it, but where is this story located? What city? Anybody catch it as we've been reading it? Bethlehem! Bethlehem! Where Jesus was born. Bethlehem. Who was the Christ figure in the story of Ruth, the person of mercy and grace? Ruth. Now, it's not a coincidence, you guys and gals, that Luke, the writer of the gospel story, according to Luke, the one that is the friendliest to us Gentiles, us non-Jews, us foreigners, where does he begin the story? Bethlehem. Bethlehem. Jesus is the new Ruth. And it's no coincidence that Matthew, by the way, the writer of the first gospel in the New Testament, in his genealogy, it's really quite incredible. He names five women, except I was going to mention it to Bathsheba. He just says Uriah's wife. He doesn't use the word Bathsheba, which I'm a little upset about, but he does mention Ruth. He mentions Ruth and that genealogy. Matthew wants us to see that our hearts, the core of who we are, is ultimately tied to this story, the story of Ruth. Ruth is the Jesus of the Old Testament. Jesus learned about the heart of compassion from the story of Ruth. He has her genes, and we have them too. This is who we are. Now, I was watching the election on Tuesday night for a little bit. And then I just couldn't do it much longer. And so Cindy and I turned to a documentary that we were watching. And you may recognize the person we were watching this documentary about, Martha Stewart, of all people, right? I mean, we're watching this Martha Stewart documentary. It's pretty darn good, by the way. And it's very interesting because she says in the middle of this what her life goal is. Throughout my life, she says, I have tried to identify void in the world, and in the people I know, either in the areas of their personal life or in their community life. And then I try to use my gifts, she says, to fill those voids. If there's a random, uninspiring field out there, she says, I'm going to fill that void with a beautiful garden, because that's my gift. That's what I'm going to do. Now, one of the greatest parts of this documentary was, though, you remember what happened to Martha Stewart. She ended up where? In prison for 150 days. Can you imagine this wealthy? I mean, she's super wealthy. And she goes to this prison, and she is humbled. She is humbled by that experience. At first, she just can't see how she can get through this. But she meets someone there in prison who is tending a garden. This prisoner is tending a garden, and she starts watching her gardening, and she's got gifts. She's good at it. And Martha starts helping her, and she starts getting a little into other people in her community there. And pretty soon, somebody asks her, a group of women ask her if she could speak on being an entrepreneur. because that's who she is. And so she starts telling them and working with all these people of different colors and cultures and different walks of life, and she starts talking to them about how they maybe could do something and be an entrepreneur. And she starts making friends. And you can just see this transformation in this movie. I would say that Martha starts living chesed. She starts living loving kindness, and the folks there start living it to them, to her. And it changes her. And then, on the day of prison, guess what she walks out with? It's this shawl, right? Well, this shawl was a shawl that was actually knitted by somebody in prison. And so she starts, she wears this on outside. This shawl becomes very popular. This gal in prison is making these left and right so she can sell them out into the world. And it becomes a wonderful story about chesed, of loving kindness, and how that weaves a different community. And so here we are in this spot, right? And we have a couple choices. We can just shrink, or we can, like Ruth and Naomi, come together, build something hopeful here and out in the world. We can be a place of safety and hope for people, and we can be a place of safety and hope wherever we go. Even if we end up in prison, something good can happen because we are a people of chesed. And so that's what I'm hoping for. I think there's a great hopeful place for us here in this world. There is a huge void out there that is just needs our love and tenderness. So let us go forth and do that. And all the people said, amen.